From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Ed Morin with the news on This Day in Maine, Monday, July 27th, 2020. Republican legislative leaders, along with several representatives of Maine's tourism industry, held a press conference today outside of the state capitol to request that the state no longer require tourists from Massachusetts and Rhode Island to either quarantine or show proof of a negative COVID-19 test as a condition of coming to Maine. Historically, visitors from Massachusetts have been a big part of the state's summer tourism season. Presque Isle Representative Trey Stewart is Assistant GOP House Leader.
The folks that are making those decisions right now are in the executive branch. We hope that those folks, particularly the governor, are going to hear our cry today from the folks that are in the industry and this plea to reopen Maine's tourist-based economy.
The group also called for an increase in the minimum size of gatherings from 50 to 150. Governor Mills released a statement rejecting the proposal, saying she cannot understand, quote, why Republicans care more about Massachusetts money than the life of a Maine person. Maine's positivity rate for the COVID-19 virus is among the lowest in the country, and Mills says that she is not going to jeopardize public health or put the state's economy more at risk. 18 new cases of COVID-19 have been identified by the Maine Center for Disease Control. No new deaths have been reported, holding that number at 119. The number of active cases is 421. The cumulative number of cases recorded by the CDC since March is 3,832. Maine forestry officials say the source of a May wildfire that consumed 45 acres in Baxter State Park remains undetermined, but it was not caused by lightning. The fire took place May 21st. It started near the Appalachian Trail on the Penobscot River's West Branch. Maine Forest Rangers and Baxter State Park personnel controlled the fire, which destroyed some buildings and infrastructure. The Maine Forest Service says it's asking for help from people who are hiking or fishing in the area on the day of the fire. Advocates are urging state lawmakers to hold manufacturers of so-called forever chemicals accountable. Last week, the state announced that high amounts of chemicals known as PFAS were detected in milk from a Central Maine dairy farm. It's the second farm in the state known to have excessive contamination from PFAS, which have been widely used in consumer products. As Patty White reports, a proposed bill before the legislature's Judiciary Committee would give Mainers harmed by the chemicals more legal recourse.
The milk from the Central Maine Dairy Farm had PFAS levels well above the allowable threshold. In an online press conference, Patrick McRoy, deputy director of the Environmental Health Strategy Center, says they were 70 times the limit.
These numbers are quite literally off the chart.
The farm where the contaminated milk came from has not been identified, but the Maine Department of Agriculture says in a news release that the farm is no longer producing milk. It's also had to suspend beef sales until those products can be tested. As the state investigates the source of the PFAS contamination, McRoy says there's a likely culprit: treated wastewater sludge. For years, farms across the state have spread the sludge as fertilizer. But a few years ago, another farm in Arundel also had to stop producing milk because it was tainted with PFAS. The source was the sludge. McRoy says even though certain PFAS chemicals haven't been manufactured in the U.S. for decades, they accumulate in the environment over time.
It's incredibly unlikely that this was a recent contamination that caused the spike. Chances are this is a historic pollution that is occurring at this farm that we are just now picking up.
But the ability of farmers and others to seek legal recourse is limited, says State Democratic Representative Henry Ingerson. Under current law, they have to file a lawsuit within 6 years of when the pollution occurs. He submitted a bill that would change the requirement to within 6 years of when the pollution is discovered.
PFAS contamination due to land spreading, landfill leachate, the use of firefighting foam, and other sources may have occurred for years and decades before any affected individual became aware of the contamination and even aware of the harm or even the existence of these PFAS compounds.
PFAS is a family of man-made chemicals that have been used in consumer products ranging from nonstick cookware to takeout food containers to carpeting. Though certain PFAS can't be manufactured in the U.S., they can be produced internationally. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency says that PFAS persist in the environment and in the body. Dr. Lonnie Graham, a family physician and former director of the Maine Center for Disease Control, says they can affect the immune system and have been linked to other health problems, including cancer.
Against this backdrop, we must acknowledge that the extent of PFAS contamination in Maine remains largely unknown.
Graham, who is also a member of Governor Janet Mills' PFAS task force, says that's why a majority of the task force's members support changing state law. The Judiciary Committee is holding a public hearing on the bill Tuesday. Supporters say 37 other states have similar laws. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
The governor's Economic Recovery Committee today told lawmakers that the state will need to invest hundreds of millions of dollars to recover from the effects of the pandemic, and even then, it will take several years. Maine Public's Mel Leary joins us from our State House Bureau with more on the challenge facing the legislature's Appropriations Committee as it anticipates a significant revenue shortfall on the horizon. Mel, the Recovery Committee wants the state to spend money at a time when there won't be as much money to spend. How's that going to work?
Well, that's the big question, of course, Ed. They got a preview of some expected bad news that when the Revenue Forecasting Commission meets later this week, that group will take the economic projections, actual revenues that have come in the last few months, and do a reprojection of revenues. Finance Commissioner Kirsten Figueroa says her guess is the red ink will be about $625 million, and that'll be the job of the administration and the Appropriations Committee to figure out where that money's going to come from.
That's a lot of money. What options do they have?
Well, the first, of course, is cutting some existing spending. That was done during the recession, if you recall, back 2008, 2009. Raising taxes is always an option, but not a very good one. Nobody wants to do that at a recession. The big hope here is that Congress will allow the state to use some of the federal CARES Act money it received. The state got $1.25 billion, but much of that has been spent or committed. The latest budget office spreadsheet shows about $321 million not spent or allocated. And the hope is Congress appropriates more money for the states and also provides more flexibility on how that remaining balance of CARES Act money can be used.
So, there are a lot of tough decisions that have to be made. Does that mean there's going to be a special session?
Well, Ed, if Congress doesn't provide more money, it probably means a session so that cuts could be spread out over most of a year. It'll take time for the new legislature that's elected in November to get up and operating, and that would push a lot of those cuts into the last quarter or half of the year. Ed, not all the needs, though, are totally known yet. For example, today they got a report from the judicial branch. They're seeking close to $13 million to renovate courthouses to make them safe for workers and for the public.
So it sounds like an awful lot is riding on what Congress does. Is that right, Mel?
Absolutely, Ed. And it's not just if it provides aid to the states. It's what else is in this package they put together. For example, there are many things they can do that will affect the economy, from changing the unemployment benefits to providing direct revenues to the state municipalities, to schools to help them reopen. So until those figures are finally worked out, and we know what Congress is going to do, the legislature kind of is in a holding pattern, waiting to see what happens.
Maine Public's Mal Leary in Augusta. Mal, thanks so much.
Thank you, Ed.
Time for a look at the weather forecast with meteorologist Paul Cousins.
The warm front has lifted to the crown of Maine, with numerous showers and thunderstorms having erupted to the south. Those storms will collapse, though, with few, if any, south of Fryeburg, Waterville, and Searsport. Partly cloudy late at night, still sultry, 66 in the mountains to 75 far south. Tomorrow, our final day of steam heat, as a cool front slowly arcs through Maine. Partly sunny statewide, scattered showers and thunderstorms. The focus across the entire coast and eastern counties, 78 north to a blast furnace, low 90s far south. Wednesday, a smidge drier across the coastal plain, partly cloudy, a better beach day. Partly sunny farther north with isolated afternoon showers and thunder, 77 to 89 north to south. Thursday, we'll see variable cloudiness with scattered afternoon showers and isolated thunderstorms across the northern half of the state, mid-70s north of mountains to the mid-80s far south. Friday, notably drier for all, at last. Partly cloudy south, partly sunny north and mountains with scattered afternoon showers, mid-70s north to the mid-80s far south. This is meteorologist Paul Cousins for Maine Public.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org and join us tomorrow on Maine Calling at 1 on Maine Public Radio for a look at the use and failings of the Freedom of Information Act. Amit Morin.